So the talk tonight, I've changed the name a couple times, but currently it's called Seeing Through the Matrix of JavaScript MV Star Frameworks or MV Asterisk Frameworks. In particular, I'm talking about AngularJS, Backbone, and Ember, right? And what I'm hoping you'll get out of it is if you're new to the frameworks, I hope it gives you a foundation for more quickly learning all the frameworks, that kind of foundational knowledge. If you know one of the frameworks really well, but you know haven't really looked into the other ones, I think what it'll do is help you translate your knowledge in one to the other one and see that they're not quite so different. And if for nothing else, if you really like the framework you're into, you can at least make a better argument with your coworker about why you should use your framework, right? But I think the main, the big thing that everyone can kind of take away from this, even if, let's say you know all the frameworks, I'm hopeful that having this, these frameworks continue to evolve, right? In a couple months, we're gonna have a new version of Angular, and guess what? People are freaking out because the syntax doesn't look anything like the current version of Angular. But there are foundational things in these frameworks that I'm gonna show you tonight that aren't gonna change, right? The rest is syntax and ceremony in my mind. I mean, it's not that they're not important, but this I feel like is the core stuff that helped me when I was researching for my book and looking across all the frameworks, the pattern I saw that came out, and I'll talk about that more. So a little bit about me. Name's Craig McKeachy. I blog at funnyant.com. The book I wrote, you can find out more about it, javascriptframeworkguide.com. One important point is I don't dress like this normally. My wife once a year or so makes me dress just like my children and then go get pictures taken. So I just want, and I've never quite seen a picture of myself that big. It's kind of scary to me, really, really. We mentioned a couple times, but basically the genesis for this talk is I wrote a book, comparing and contrasting the JavaScript frameworks and talking about not just comparing and contrasting, but talking about how you can learn them more quickly. And so one chapter out of my book is definitely, the central genesis of this, okay? So if you're having trouble keeping up with all the JavaScript libraries, the innovation happening, you are not alone, right? I'm with you. I can't even, I train on AngularJS and I can't even keep up sometimes, right? And it's my full-time job to know about these things, right? So I definitely feel for you, and that's why I'm trying to come here and help out, right? So you are not alone, just know that. Okay, the inspiration for this talk. So I talked a little bit about it already, but I think one important point is do you guys remember back when you learned your very first programming language? It was pretty hard, right? And this is sort of what I put in the description for the talk. But then when you learned your second programming language, it was a whole lot easier. And then the third got easier, and the fourth, and now sometimes, if as you become more experienced and learn more languages, you can look at a programming language and pretty much pick it up pretty quick. And why is that? It's because when you look at, like, if you start opening your third and fourth programming book, you notice that it'll say, conditionals. What are the conditionals? What are the loops? How do you declare a variable? What are the operators? It's the same sort of common constructs, just done differently across languages. Now, not that there's not important differences, just as there isn't important differences in these frameworks, but once you really understand those foundational things that help you understand what makes up a programming language, you can learn programming languages a lot faster. So that's what I'm hoping to get you to in the world of JavaScript MVC frameworks. And this is a quick disclaimer. When I showed these slides this presentation before I gave it for JS Remote Conf to a good friend of mine, he looked at it and said, be careful, people think they know everything about these frameworks from seeing this talk. And so you probably know just enough to be dangerous after you see this, but this is a talk more about similarities than differences. So the other sort of inspiration for this talk is the fact that when you look online, all you see is this framework is different than this one and it's better because of this, or I'll never use that framework again and talk like that. When I think the reality is these frameworks are all trying to solve the same problem. They're all a need, and that is to build these richer JavaScript web applications that are more akin to like a desktop application that you're used to using. Who's ever programmed in like Flash or Flex or WPF or any of that? Anyone in here? Right? So that's what we're trying to do here. We're just trying to not, you know, we're trying to embrace the web and still build a web app, embrace the web standards, but at the same time have that rich experience that you get in that desktop application. And so I think it's important, most important to talk about the similarities in these frameworks. If everyone could do a favor, we are gonna do some, I'm trying to experiment tonight. We're gonna do like every 10 or 15 minutes, we're gonna do a quick lab, okay? And we're gonna have plunkers for these labs. So if you have a computer, I'm gonna have people pair up. So everybody, if you don't have a computer, don't worry, you can just pair with somebody. Go to funnyent.com, which is my blog, /Michigan, pop in your email, and then it will send you a link to all the plunkers that we're gonna use for the labs. And it takes a little bit for the email to get there, which is why I'm having you do this right now. I will tell you, if you're nervous, oh, is he gonna bombard me with email? I may send you the slides from this talk as well later tonight, but I will not send you any other emails unless you click a link at the top of that to enter in the contest to win my book at the end, okay? So feel free to enter your email. I won't do anything with it except send you labs, okay? But if everybody can do that, that has a computer, that'd be great. Make the lab sections a little easier. So everybody got that funnyant.com/Michigan? Let me know if the page isn't up or something crazy's happening, because that stuff always happens during talks, right? So, there's also at the top of the email that I'll send you when you plug your email in there is a couple surveys, polls that are interesting to kind of, that I'll show to everybody at, during one of the labs to kind of talk about, you know, it's like, which framework are you using at work? Which framework do you like the most? That sort of thing. So we can, there's a lot of people in this room. I'd really like to, you know, see that feedback, and I'm sure you would too in the room. So the first thing I'm gonna talk about is web application architectures, right? And just to give you some technologies to sort of underpin these ideas of architectures, is there's two different kinds of web applications in a broad stroke for me. There's client-side web applications and there's server-side web applications. And Rails and ASP.NET MVC and ASP.NET and JSP, all this stuff is the server-side web applications, and the client-side web applications are these new frameworks you see popping up over on the other side. So let's talk more specifically about what does that look like. If I can get my slide to forward here. There we go. So this is what I like to call a traditional server-side web application architecture. So this is the, you know, this is the Rails and the ASP.NET MVC and the PHP, whatever your MVC framework is on the server. The key point of this slide basically, I went one slide too far. Sorry about that. So this is the server-side web application architecture. And the key point here is where the templates and the data come together, okay? So when you think about, you know, a template is just HTML with some dynamic placeholders in between to get the dynamic data into the page, right? And with a server-side web application architecture, that stuff comes together on the web server, not in the web browser. So an initial HTTP request is made. All that magic happens on the server. You get some data out of the database. Your template comes together with that data on the server, and back over the wire, you send HTML, okay? So contrast that with what's happening in a single page web application, right? Which is what all these frameworks are helping you build, okay? And what's happening here is you have an initial HTTP request that returns HTML, but that's just that, what I like to call the shell page or the single page in the single page web application. So it's essentially the page that looks like the page over there on the far left of the screen that is a shell page with a div in it somewhere or some kind of HTML markup that is a placeholder for other virtual pages to be shifted, to be placed into, okay? And I know this is probably a review for some people, but I think having this big picture is important before we dig into seeing code, and we'll see some code, I promise, okay? Then the next thing that happens is an AJAX request is made over up to the server, and an HTML template comes back. But that AJAX request, it's made in the web browser. sorry, let me put this differently. It's made by JavaScript in the web browser. So, and then another other additional requests are made back to a web API of some sort, and JSON comes back over the wire. So to just put it in one sentence, the key difference in this diagram is that your template and your data are no longer coming together on the server. They're coming together in the client, in the browser. You are building your templating engine is now on the client, running in the browser, in your web browser, okay? And so I think that's important. There's sort of an assumption with all these frameworks, and if you don't, you know, if you've never looked at them before and you don't get this, then you know, all the code doesn't mean anything to you, right? So this is the big picture. Initial HTTP request happens, brings back a shell page that's got a placeholder in it. Additional snippets of HTML, virtual pages, come back over the wire and they get placed into that div. And then, well, if they get placed in the div, they're just, you know, not dynamics, they're just raw HTML. They're snippets of HTML. They don't have any data in them. So the browser's also making AJAX requests to get JSON data. And then the browser's bringing those together and creating this virtual page on the client and helping you navigate between pages for them, okay? So we'll talk about this more, but that's a good place to start. So if you think about it, when we're in these server-side web application architectures, remember that's the one where the HTML and the data come together on the server and you send HTML back over the wire, you could just be on the server and have one main method that generates a bunch of HTML, intersperses whatever data you get out of your database out of it. This is how we started it with our, you know, programming frameworks, and just builds a string up of HTML, right? But why don't we do that, right? Why don't we just build a string of HTML in one method? And the answer is because over the years we found that that's kind of unmaintainable, right? We can't maintain our applications. We can't reason about them very easily. So what we've done over the years is we've created MVC frameworks on the server that have things in them like templates and a router and a controller and models and all that stuff you see up there, right? So that's what's happening with server-side MVC frameworks. Notice where they are. They're on the web server. With these client-side web applications, all of that stack, or most of it, we'll talk about some details later, is moving to the client, right? And it's running in JavaScript in the user's browser's memory, okay? And so that's an important shift. So this is your AngularJS's and your Backbones and your Embers and your Reacts of the world, right? And this is your Rails and your ASP.NET MVC and whatever else. Okay? If I didn't name your framework, I'm sorry. Okay, so what I'm gonna do is here's a quick demo. I'll show it real quick since I kicked it off already. Simple as can be, right? You go to a home page, you go to an about page, but notice what's happening in the browser. There is no refresh of the page, right? And this is simple AJAX, right? This is not revolutionary, but it shows that what's happening, we're gonna look at what the code looks like to pull this off in each of the frameworks, and I think it'll help you kind of appreciate, start to see the various pieces that build up a framework, okay? So let's look at, So the first piece of it, there's a template section that I've got several parts to. So the template section starts with this single page. I also called it a shell page, right? I'll call it one of those two things. So what does this look like in AngularJS? Okay. So you notice right here in the middle of the page, if you look for the highlight there, there's a placeholder there. Remember the client-side architecture slide, right? There was a placeholder. There was a div with a placeholder. Same thing here. So this single page is usually an index.html, but it could be anything, right? Whatever your web server's configured to serve as your default page. But this is a static page. This is just, notice the HTML file extension, right? It comes down, you just get a placeholder to put the stuff in. The other thing that kind of is interesting to notice when you're looking at Angular here is what does it take to install these MVC frameworks? Include a script tag, basically, right? And include whatever modules and dependencies those frameworks have. So it's very kind of deceptively simple, right? But there's a lot, you know, coming with these frameworks, right? So you have a single page. So remember what this looks like in Angular, and let's take a look at what it looks like in Ember, okay? And then if you watch for the highlight again, there's the where that placeholder is in Ember. Now, a couple differences, again, index.html, it's just a static HTML page. You look at the bottom of the page, Ember happens to have a dependency on jQuery, right? So you have jQuery as well, and you have the Handlebars templating engine because it piggybacks off of the Handlebars templating engine. So it has two dependencies, but you can kind of see installation still not a big deal. But you can see the similarity. One thing you'll notice though is with the Angular example, that placeholder was just smack dab in the body tag. Here there's a script tag, which we'll go into a little bit more when we look at templates, and it's inside the script tag because Ember has this idea of a default template named application. See the data template name application. So it's just a slight nuance, but it's achieving the same thing. It's just that instead of having the placeholder sit in the body, it goes the other place. Okay, so backbone, right? So again, watch for the highlight. Div equals ID equals content, right? So now with backbone, this content is not a predefined term, right? It's piggybacking off your jQuery skills. So you can, if anybody's played with backbone, you can do pretty much anything you want. Backbone, I think, is kind of like the hippie framework, right? It's like, you know, you can name that whatever you want to, not be at me to get in your way and tell you what you need to name this. It's fine, you know, go with it. So so it's very unopinionated is the more PC way of describing the framework, which a lot of people embrace, right? It's hey, whatever element you name there, and we'll see later, this is where I'm going to replace that dynamic content. And notice with Backbone, again, you can clearly see the dependencies, right? You've got a DOM manipulation library. It doesn't have to be jQuery. It could be Zepto or something else, but there's you need a jQuery type library in there to work with. And it also has a dependency on underscore, which is a utility library that does a lot of like work with collections. It also happens to have a small micro templating engine language built in, similar to like Handlebars or something that we just saw with Ember. Okay, so let's move a little faster. So we're on to the templates and views section. So now we've got a single page, right? We've got this placeholder in the middle of it. So what are we gonna put in that placeholder? We're gonna put these HTML snippets. That's what templates are, right? Templates and views, that's what they are. So there's a couple different ways to pull this off. This is Angular again. You gotta watch for the symbol up there to tell which framework we're moving to, okay? And you've got, you can do embedded templates, right? So that's where you have these script tags in the page with a special type to them, right? And what the Angular framework is doing on your behalf is when we configure the router, which we'll see in a little bit, that ID is meaningful there, and it'll match that up to, in the router, you can get to this script block based on that ID, essentially. However, what's more common in a production application is to have external templates. So over on the left of the slide is kind of showing you that, you know, all that's in home.html and about.html are just, you know, H1s, right? And they can be separate files, right? And so, and they are by default with Angular, if you put them in external files, they'll be loaded asynchronously the first time when the page is requested, okay? Now, note that that's only the first time. So if you go to the homepage, then you go to the about page, and then you go back to the homepage. When you go back to the homepage, it is going to pull the out of its in-memory JavaScript cache, more particularly this template cache object here that Angular has. It's going to pull out that HTML template. So you don't have to worry about it getting reloaded over and over and over again. What most people eventually get to after they've worked with Angular or one of these other frameworks for a while is they use something like a build task like Grunt or Gulp, and see there's a Grunt Angular templates down there, and then what does this build task do for you? Well, essentially, in Angular's case, it writes this sort of pseudocode for you that you're seeing at the bottom. There is this template cache service in Angular, and it puts, it's just a dictionary or hash table, you can think of it just like that, and it puts, based on the key, the put has a key and a value, right? The key is the path to whatever external file you have, right, home, in this case, templates/home.html. And the value is the contents of home.html, you know, escaped so that it can live in JavaScript. So what this gets you is you can have sort of a slower initial load for your application. You can take a heavier weight on the page the first time it comes down. But then On subsequent navigations, anywhere in your application, all your templates are already down in memory in JavaScript. Okay, so it's kind of a trade-off thing, but a lot of people do prefer that. Most people end up preferring this. You could imagine, though, how in a production application that gets big enough, this becomes untenable at some point and difficult to take that much of a hit all up front. Okay. So what does this look like in Ember? We're about to a lab, so hang in there for a second. I know watching somebody talk can get monotonous, but we're almost to a lab where we're gonna add a route with one of these frameworks, okay? So, but let's take a look at what it looks like in Ember, okay? Very similar, right? The templates can be embedded in the page. So these script blocks here are right in index.html there, right? They're right in index.html. Or they can be external, like you could put them in templates or a views folder, and they can be external, okay? If they're external, you should use like one of these grunt or gulp tasks to pre-compile your templates. And in the Ember world, it seems like it's more common to do that on the server ahead of time and pre-compile them with handlebars ahead of time so that you don't even have to send down the compilation engine for the templates down to the client. You could just send what they call the handlebars runtime down. Okay. So what does this look like in Backbone? Okay. Again, very similar, right? I mean, I said there are differences to these frameworks, but very similar. Okay. I think we're getting the idea here. Sorry, I went the wrong way there. Okay, and same kind of thing. And with Backbone, it's even, you know, even more sort of open to implementation, right? You can load these templates. This is a line from a view file, which we'll talk about in a minute. And you can load them however. You can load them via AJAX from the server. You can load them from embedded script tags. The implementation is definitely left up to you with Backbone, but there's a little bit more code to write there usually. Okay. So now we're to the router. So we've got these fragments of HTML trying to go into this single page, right? And what does that look like when you configure the router to go from the home to the about page? So here's what it looks like in Angular, right? The Angular module for people with a Java background is based like a package, right? For .NET developers, it's a namespace. For Ruby developers, pretty similar concept to Ruby modules, right? It's this thing that helps you organize your code, okay? So that's all that first line is. Then you configure and you send in this route provider service. You don't have to remember all this syntax. I'm gonna hand you out some plunkers or whatever. And it simply says, when I go to this path, the left side of that, I want you to load this template, in this case from a template URL. So, and that's pretty straightforward. Now there's a lot of other configuration options. Eventually we'll get to controllers, but I'm just trying to kind of build up onto this slowly so everybody can follow along, okay? What does this look like in Ember? It's even less code, because Ember, if you'll notice something as we're looking through the slides, is very convention-based. So, it's very much like Ruby, right? Convention over configuration. They want you to have to write as little code as possible. So for example, in that first route, the home route, you'd have to define the path because otherwise it would be at /home. But in the second route, you basically don't have to say the path because it will by default assumes a /about route. Okay. So Backbone, taking a look at how it looks, what it looks like to configure the router. Basically, the key thing is that route's hash up in the top there, that object literal. On the left is the path. On the right is the name of a function that you call to load up a view, which is kind of like a controller, closest thing to a controller. And so taking a look at the implementation of the home route function there, you simply new up your home view. Sometimes people have the instantiation or initialization of the home view, automatically place it into the page. I prefer this because it's a little more flexible, right? So you go and you find your placeholder, and that looks a lot like something you know, jQuery, right? Doesn't that look like you're back in your jQuery world, right? Really comfortable, right? And that's the way Backbone will make you feel, right? It's very, also writing a little bit more code, but it's very comfortable for the person transitioning from jQuery. Right. So, and you know, a few other configuration options. So, that brings us important tip here. Let's see. I am missing my lab. Oh, there we go. Okay, so it's a little experiment. We'll see how this goes. So if you got the email from me, if you signed up for it, first thing I need you guys to do is pair up, right? Because everybody here doesn't have a computer. People have varying levels of knowledge with these various frameworks. So please help me out, pair up with somebody. On this first lab, now note, we're only going to have about 10 minutes to do this. So, you know, if you take a break now, you may not get through this, so be warned. So what I encourage you to do is use a framework you don't know, right? Use one of the frameworks. If you know one framework really well, use a different framework, right? See how it works in a different one. And basically what you're going to do is you have a working example of you know, what we just looked at, that about and homepage, and so add a contact us page to it. And so that contact us page for now, we'll build upon it, can just have the word contact on it or foo or whatever you want, right? But use a framework, okay? So I'll start a timer right about now, and we'll stop at about 10 minutes and revisit things, okay? And let me know if you have any questions. There's plenty of people around the room that know this stuff well, so I'll try to recruit them as well. Questions? Feel free to ask. But I just wanted to give you a little breather there and get your hands on that, make the concept concrete, okay? So this is a little tip that I meant to tell you before. I like to give out tips. I think they're useful talks. So, because no one's going to click that folder if you do it, right? No one. All right. So we're moving on to controllers, right? So we've got these templates magically being loaded into the views, but at some point we need to write some code, right, around that controller. So not going too far from the original demo, but on the about page, right, I've got now got a detail button. When you click the detail button, it's showing you, hiding and showing a div, right? And so the reason I chose this example is because controllers in my mind have two general responsibilities. One is to get, sort of set up the model data and get the data available to the template or to the view, right? And the other responsibility is to handle user interaction. So as simple as this is, that clicking that detail button, that's, you know, demonstrates what it looks like in each of these frameworks to handle user interaction. And then clicking a button is the most common. So what does this look like in Angular? Okay. So first off, again, we've got that angular.module bit. I just have a longer module name that time. Don't let that confuse you. And we create a controller within that module, within that namespace, or within that package. We're calling it an about controller, and we're sending in this weird thing called scope in the Angular world. Okay. Now, it's becoming passé to use scope in the Angular world. There's this new controller as syntax, but I'm going to stick with the example most commonly seen online for now. But just know that the newer versions of Angular are moving away from having this scope object, and you work more on the this keyword to assign data and get it out to your template or to your view. That's all I'll say about that for now. So, but the scope in this example is the thing that helps, is the object that communicates between your template and your controller. So you can't just put stuff directly on your controller in the Angular world. You have to kind of communicate through the scope. So what you're communicating in this case is some data, right? We're creating an object literal here, and we're communicating this is the about page, that body text. And we're also exposing to the template a toggle details function, okay? And we call that toggle details function right here, right? In that ng click. This ng show is, and these are called directives in Angular. Ng show is basically takes a Boolean, right? So depending on what that property is set to, the details visible property is set to, it's going to hide or show that paragraph tag. Now there's an ng if and an ng show. I won't go into too much detail, but ng show is, you know, sets display equal to none, so it's doing it via CSS, and ng if is actually getting it out of the DOM, okay? So, but that's what it looks like to pull that off, to write a basic controller and get some data on the screen in Angular. So what does it look like in the Ember world? Okay, well, the first thing you'll notice is there is this route object. So don't confuse the route object, as I did when I first started learning this, with the router, right? The route object is a new, unique thing being added to Ember, and it's not something that is the router. The way I like to think about it is it takes those, remember I said there's two responsibilities of a controller. One is to, you know, get your model data to the screen. The other one is to handle user interactions events. Well, what's the other thing you hear, you know, if you're from server-side MVC frameworks? It's always keep your controller slim, right? Don't let there be too much code in there. Push the logic back into your business logic layer, domain layer, your data access layer, that sort of thing, and keep your controllers nice and slim. Well, what Ember's trying to do in my mind by doing this is taking those two responsibilities and giving them each an object to sort of, you know, do those things in. So that route object is hooking up a function to that model, and that's basically making that page property available on the about controller. So it kind of has a bunch of, by you writing that little model hook there, you're essentially setting up your model so that your controller can be just about handling user interactions. One thing I like about Ember a lot is that actions hash there, the actions object literal. It has a nice place where things that are sort of exposed out to the view are clearly delineated in that actions hash, right? So that toggle details function comes down here. Now, looking at the Ember view syntax, this is handlebars, right? This is the templating engine handlebars that kind of won the templating engine wars before there were JavaScript MVC frameworks. And it uses the similar, you know, mustache style templates there. But you'll notice you can actually have like Boolean logic in the view. It doesn't have to be attached to a DOM element. So that's a little unique to Ember, is that you don't have to necessarily clutter your view up with DOM elements that don't need to be there, that are just there to hide and show things. You can literally, you know, throw a pound if in there. It's done here. Okay. What does this look like in Backbone? Okay. One thing you'll start to notice is, you know, Backbone gives you the ultimate liberty, right? The ultimate unopinionated framework, right? But in exchange for that, you have to write some code or use another framework like Marionette, which is a framework that's kind of on top of Backbone. In fact, Backbone doesn't even try to call itself a framework. It calls itself a library because it's you know, smaller in its ambition, basically. Right? It tries to do it well. So just to explain this real quick, who's familiar with Backbone views? Raise your hand in here, generally. Okay, so I won't. Seems like at least explaining this won't be lost. So a Backbone view is the closest thing to a controller. So you'll probably be saying, why isn't this called controller, right? It's just the way they named objects in Backbone, right? But it's the closest thing to map to it, and you can kind of see why. There's sort of a life cycle, like a template method pattern or a life cycle to the Backbone views. There's an initialize and then there's a render, okay? You don't have to implement either of these, but there's a certain pattern that you see over and over and over again. And a framework like Marionette basically takes a lot of this repeated code that you have to write over and over again, and it removes it and makes it more convention-based. So taking template there, that underscore is using the underscore library. Remember I said it has its own little templating engine inside of it. So it's sort of compiling the chunk of HTML that's in that about template and putting it into that template property for us. The events hash is a lot like that actions hash you saw in the Ember example. The left side has a, you know, how you read that is it's handling a click event. On the second part is basically like a jQuery selector, right? Dot detail. So if you look over here, it's saying the button with a class of detail, right? So that maps to that. And then the right-hand side is what's the function I'm going to run when that event happens, okay? And the function that it runs is toggle details, which simply, you know, if you're not familiar with toggle and jQuery, that's just jQuery, right? That's just setting display equals none on and off, toggling it back and forth for you. Okay, to show or hide something. Any questions? I'm going through this stuff pretty fast, but I got a lot to cover. Anybody lost? Okay. This brings us to another lab, but we're not gonna break and do it, I don't think. I'm gonna go another section. We'll have two labs, and then we'll just do them kind of together so we can keep moving here, not be so disruptive. This lab two here is basically, you know, you enhance your contact us if you went ahead and did it page, and add some dynamic data to your form. So all I'm saying is, you know, assign something to the scope object if you're doing it Angular, get some data to your view. And then, you know, if you have extra time, handle a click event, right? Handle some user interaction and just get familiar with what that looks like in a framework that you don't know as well, right? So you can see it. So here's another thing I found on Twitter. So I think, honestly, this is becoming less and less true now. And that's because I think most people have settled on one of these three frameworks I'm talking about, or you know, the next generations of them, or a couple innovators like React.js is the one that comes up a lot. But I don't see there being, you know, yet another library every week. You know, that phase seems to have passed, right? And you know, another thing to note is, you know, it's a little bit of a different decision looking at something like Backbone versus Angular and Ember. You're getting more of a framework with Angular and Ember, as you're starting to see with these code examples. And with Backbone, you're getting more of a library. So it depends on, you know, and something less opinionated. So it depends on what you're looking for on your project, right? But it's not as big and hard a decision as it used to be. But that was a funny tweet. Okay. So data binding. So you're starting to see, I mean, we've been through two or three pieces of these frameworks. And hopefully what you're seeing is these frameworks, you know, the syntax is different, but they have unique things that make, you know, may make you want to choose one framework over another, but they're solving the same problem. I go back to that, they're trying to build that rich desktop experience on the web. So I think this is really an important point. And knowing like the stack of things that this framework needs to do and being able to evaluate the frameworks on each one of those sort of, you know, features that it has and how well it does it, okay? So data binding is the feature that most people start with, right? When they're looking at these examples. But I don't like to start with it because I think that kind of misses the point of the whole architecture, right? But I think it's time to look at it. So if you haven't seen this demo, you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, but this is the one, you know, Angular kind of gained its fame from, right? This is two-way data binding and knockout to some extent, which was really specialized in this. So the idea here is, So one-way data binding is, this is a distinction I like to make, is from the model to the view, okay? And so if you're in some JavaScript code and you change the model, you know that you don't have to write another line of code. Your view will automatically, anything bound to that will automatically be updated, okay? Two-way data binding is anytime you touch something in the view, like here, I'm entering an input, the model is automatically updated. So that's why you're immediately seeing the text being output on the screen below that, because the model's being updated and that's bound to the model. What does that look like in Angular code? Well, you know, this is, you know, was built for the demo, right? They're doing all the create the module and create the controller on your behalf so they can show this in a very terse number of lines. But essentially you're saying, you know, create me a name property on the scope there where you see ng model. And you just have a regular text input, and then you output that model property straight back out to the UI. Okay, and this is very powerful for productivity, right, in these frameworks, but it does have some performance costs, as you might imagine, doing something like this. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So what does this look like in the Ember world? Very similar. You notice one thing, Ember tends to use these input helpers, right? These helpers. And so it looks a little less like HTML, which, you know, doesn't sit quite as well with me, but, you know, the Ember team would argue, when I hear like Tom Dale, one of the creators, talk about it, he'll say, I want to know what's dynamic on my page. I want it to be called out for me, you know, very clearly in the curly braces. So, you know, they tend to prefer this. You might be wondering, well, how does it know you know, what's dynamic there. And you notice that value equals name is not quoted. That's how they know to data bind that part of the expression and to leave type equals text as static text, basically. Okay. But again, very terse. Okay. So I show you this example, not to put a knock. You may look at this and your initial reaction is, I never would have used Backbone. I have to write all this code, right? And yes, you would, but in reality, most of the time, you do not need two-way data binding in my experience. You usually need one-way data binding. And there's a performance cost to automatically having one-way data binding in your framework. So for example, with Angular, you'll see a lot of talk online where Angular's been working on performance and working on what they call like model options so that you don't get two-way data binding unless you ask for it, sort of, because there's a cost to, you know, Angular's doing dirty checking under the hood, I won't get deep into it, to be able to do that two-way data binding. So, you know, if your users are in a regular browser and you don't have a ton of watches and bindings on the page, you're not gonna have big problems. But if you get, you know, 5,000, 10,000, you know, items that are data bound on a page, you can quickly get into performance problems, and that's the knock against the big knock against Angular a lot. And it happens because it happens a lot more, it's a lot more prevalent in mobile scenarios. So just know that, keep that in the back of your mind, right? Because somebody can have an Android phone, older browser, you know, JavaScript's not running so fast on that thing, and that shows, right? But Ember's making big strides. So I'm not gonna explain all this code, but you know, needless to say, you're manually kind of saying, hey, listen to this change event, and then re-render the UI and do this work manually. Now, there are plugins also for Backbone to do data binding. So if you're like, I love Backbone, but I need some data binding, you can and pull a plugin off the stack and use it. Okay. So we're to another lab. In this lab, you could you know, basically enhance your contact us form by adding an input and then have it, you know, whatever you type in that input be two-way data bound out to the screen. Maybe do it in a framework, you know, if you're used to working in Backbone, maybe do it in an Angular or Ember. I probably wouldn't suggest doing this in Backbone during this lab unless you fork it, because it's a decent number of lines of code, but if you're, you know, if that's your cup of tea, then go for it. So trying to look here. Anybody seen this before? That's one of my favorites. But let's go ahead and I'm trying to think in the interest of time. Let's take another 10 minutes and take a look at labs 2 and 3. Well, let me take a vote. Let's see. Do you guys want me to plow through to the end and then we'll do all the labs, or do you want to take the breaks in the middle and learn one concept at a time? How many people want to plow through? Wow, I don't even need to ask the other question. All right, so we're moving on. Let's get done. You guys want beer, right? We're going to the arena? Is that where we're going? Okay, all right. So just don't fall asleep on me, all right? That's all I ask. All right, so models, right? So this is the model demo, right? Real simple again. So I have a person model with a name property. And if I click this change name, I go to the next slide. Hang on. Try it again. It's happening a little slow. In code, I'm changing the name, right? So in code, we're changing the name to John Doe. But notice that I'm still aware of what the prior value was, because basically there's a, I want to say dirty checking, I want to say there's a, you know, a way with most of these, with all these frameworks to basically have a model and to know, do change tracking, right? To know what the previous value of that item is. So that's what we're kind of showing in this demo, right? Because that's the main feature of the model, right? In Angular, the model, some people, reasonable people might argue that it's just a plain JavaScript object. In this case, I'm using a actual service, right? Happy to talk about that afterwards. There are multiple ways to create a service, but that's a whole talk into itself. But here, you know, we're just decorating this context to create a person object. So we're calling that with the new constructor, or Angular on your behalf is calling it. So once you have that person object there, you can send it into your controller. So now, somebody who knows Angular, how is that person object just magically showing up in that controller? Dependency injection, right. So one of the key pros to Angular is it's a very testable framework, because out of the box, it's very hard to like new up an object, because you just use the dependency injection framework, because they make it so easy for you to put objects into it. Now, there is a, there's always a catch to everything in life, right? And when you minify your code, if you wrote code this way and you minified it in Angular, you'd end up without the code running properly. So there's trade-offs. We won't, if you want to talk about it afterwards, please do. But I am aware of that, but I think this is the simplest example up here. But you just, basically, you can think about it this way. You create your person object, you get an instance of your person object in your controller, and then you can do a watch on a property or multiple properties, but be careful with that because of performance on your JavaScript object. And then it gives you the old value and the new value and kind of look for it, okay? Now, I didn't quite write apples to apples with Ember and with Backbone, because I put the change event, instead of being inside the controller, I kind of handled it right in the model object here. But I think you guys can follow, get the idea. So Ember has this object that you can extend, right? And to read that, the name change property there is observing the name property to see if it changes on the initialization of the person object. And when the change happens, it just does a console.log, and the name is changed. Thing to notice that's different with Ember than Angular, different with Ember and Backbone compared to Angular, is that you use this getter and setter syntax to work with your models. So that's an important distinction. Usually, it's a pro and con thing again, right? On the one hand, you have to remember to use this getter and setter syntax. On the other hand, Angular's doing dirty checking, so it has to do a lot more work on your behalf running in the browser to detect changes and make them, whereas here, that change detection is happening because you're going through the Ember library by going through the getters and the setters, if that makes sense, okay? So, but you can do similar things in Ember and in Backbone, and I have to say, Backbone, they were really the innovator on this. They were the first framework or library to even say, we need to have a concept of a model here. We're writing, richer and richer apps here on the client side. Let's really have a model on our client side, right? So there's a lot more functionality to the Backbone model than this, but this is, one of the key things you'll use. I think the key point here is, down here in the events, I'm pointing the wrong place. So in that, up in the initialize up there, that change colon name basically means listen to the change event on the name property of this person object. And then when it does that, it can handle it, okay? And you'll have working examples of all this stuff, okay? But the idea is, you need the data in your app to be represented by something. You want those objects to be slightly intelligent to at least to be able to detect changes and things such as that, handle events, emit events, receive events, those kind of things. All right, so those are the model demos. I didn't even do a model lab because I predicted this was going, you guys were going to want to move on here. Web components, when you think about web components in each of these frameworks, it's a little bit of a stretch for Backbone to have web components, but we'll look at that in each. Think, custom tags is the easiest way to think about web components, or a jQuery plugin, but based on web standards. So something that would be like in the jQuery UI project. Now there are non-visual web components, right? I guess it sounds like you're going to have a talk coming up here, but that's the way to get the idea. This example is exceptionally probably oversimple, but there's a lot of concepts in this talk. But basically, it's the idea that this is what it looks like to create a custom tag in this language. Now, obviously, you're going to write code behind that tag. You're going to have a controller. You're going to have a lot more handling in the web when you're creating like an Angular directive. Angular calls them directives, but you can kind of get a feel for what it looks like in Angular here. So you say directive. You'll notice there's like a naming convention here that camel casing turns into dasherized syntax when you output it to the view, right? So you see this prefix hyphen hello, that's because you use the camel casing over there. So to get this code to actually run, you don't actually need that line, but you know, if you write any kind of component with in Ember with any functionality, significant functionality at all, you'll need to extend the component object and handle some events there. Okay, and this is what the closest thing I come up with in Backbone to doing this. So when you think about it, Backbone does allow you to take a view and nest another view inside of it and nest another view inside of that. So really, a custom tag like this div with the prefix hello here is really just a small view in Backbone, right? So its simplicity sometimes comes back to its advantage, right? But as you can see, a lot more code, as is normal in Backbone, but you have a lot more control. You can pick your own templating engine, you could load it from the server, you could do all these things, right? You're in fine-grained control, and it looks a lot like the jQuery you're used to, okay? So there's the demos for the web components. Let's last talk about data access, and we'll wrap up here with some closing thoughts. So the data access demo, I don't even have to click this one to show you. I just have some employees that are being loaded from a JSON file with each of these frameworks. So what does this look like in Angular? So Angular has sort of two ways to talk to web APIs, right? One is this more low-level raw $HTTP service, okay? And you can see there's basically a configuration object that takes 10 properties. These are the only two you need to get it to work, out of the box without some configuration. There's shorthand syntax. You can say http.get, for example, and skip setting the method. But at the end of the day, it's all forwarding to this configuration object. Okay, and here we're just giving it a URL, and it's the HTTP object is promise-based, right, which is nice. We'll get into that big topic. So this isn't much more than the jQuery AJAX method. So why did Angular, and jQuery AJAX in the newer versions is supporting promises too. So why did Angular bother to introduce this? Well, in order to do its magic data binding and do its dirty checking and to be aware of when model changes happen, one of the common places that data can change is when you make a request to the server. So Angular needs to have a hook in there to be, you could manually process a digest cycle in Angular. You could manually basically tell the data binding to happen, but you're going to be a lot happier, embracing the HTTP object, but that's why it exists. So some people, I've heard Tom Dale has said to me, why does Angular get such a bad rap for doing Ember data, and all they have is this HTTP object, and they don't even need the HTTP object because it's just there to kind of, help them hook into their framework or whatever, which I think is a pretty valid point. There's also a $resource object, which is a higher level abstraction, and you can write a little bit less code. If you have a web service on the back end that's very RESTful, you've probably seen it before, but you can make AJAX calls with less code, right, than this. And so that's nice to know that it's there. And so that's $resource. So that's kind of how you do data access at a very high level in the Angular world. In Ember, there's two ways to do data access. You've got jQuery included as a dependency, so you can just use $.ajax. In fact, who's familiar with Discourse, the forum software? Anybody used it or aware of it? So Jeff Atwood, who created Stack Overflow, his new project is Discourse, right? And it's basically trying to make community or forum software that's better than PHP Bulletin, right? Or PHP BB or whatever that is, right, that plagues the internet. So they chose Ember to do their project in, but they were one of the first adopters of the Ember framework, and so Ember data wasn't done enough, right, or they chose not to use it. So all they did was make, calls with $.ajax, just use their jQuery skills to do data access. There is, in fairness, it's not officially, it's on the Ember website, but they're officially kind of separate projects. There's an Ember data project, and it's much more of a full ORM, or trying to be much more like Active Record, a full ORM solution. So Ember has a much better story here. The story just unfortunately isn't quite finished or polished yet, right? So I don't know, you're in the Ember community. Is it done yet? Has it come out of beta? I don't think it has yet.
No, it's still in beta.
It's been in beta for like 2 years, so that's slight exaggeration, but at least a year and a half. So, but I have used it, and it's much better than making raw HTTP requests, so I'll say that. So in Backbone, it's a little more tied to, like, you know, your data access has a little more tied to your model objects, right? So you declare your employee there, and then you've got your employees. In most of the Backbone apps you see, they assume a RESTful web API, so you don't even need that URL property that's there. I just happened in this example, so we could, you know, put it in a Plunker, you know, have employees.json there, okay? But usually you won't even see that. You'll just see there's this collection object of employees, and it'll know by default that you want to go to /employees and do a GET request when you go to get resources on the server. But it's as simple as just pointing it at a URL if you have, you know, a non-standard URL, okay? And that's what it looks like. So I've got a lab with that. That might be one of the more fun ones. If you weren't thrilled with the last couple labs, I jumped to this one, right? Making a little data access call. The other thing on this last lab here, so I've got a list of locations. If you guys haven't come across this yet, it's a nice tip. There's this json-generator.com, and it is a really cool tool that lets you basically generate JSON test data for yourself on the website. So definitely click on that link, play around with that site a little bit. If you take nothing away from tonight, you might thank me for that, okay? I just like to end you with this thought, right? When I see these frameworks, I tend to see the similarities and not the differences. Yes, there are important differences. There are reasons why people prefer one over the other, but at the end of the day, they're all solving the same problem, and that is we want to build richer experiences for our users on the web, and we want to embrace web standards. And in order to do that, they're not that different. They all solve these similar, have these similar features implemented in different ways. And so I hope that you, if you take nothing else away from tonight, you see that, you see through the matrix of these JavaScript frameworks. Thanks. So feel free to ask questions. If you, again, remember, if you are interested in winning a free, while you're doing the last lab, I'll try to pick a winner of the, I think I'll give away like 3 books tonight, 3 copies of my book. So if you're interested in that, if you put your email in, that's not enough. Just to be clear, you have to click the link at the top of the first thing, because I didn't want to make anybody mad by putting them on an email list that they didn't want to be on, okay? So click that link if you're interested in trying to win, and your odds should be pretty good in this room, right? If I'm giving away 3, feeling like at least a 30% chance. If some people are beyond this learning level, you might even have better odds. I think you're in the 20s here, so you're pretty good. So, questions? Sure.
I'm just curious where you feel knockout falls on this. Is it dead now, or is it?
I kind of feel like it is trying to make a resurrection. I know, like, Microsoft uses it for the back end of as one of the tools for the Azure portal. Uses it, right? So it's not dead, right? To place it in this, though, the easy way to think about it is it basically provides one of those features, which is data binding. And it said, it always had the opinion that, all these other things, there were good libraries like SammyJS and HistoryJS out already that did routing and so forth. And they're like, well, pick the library that you like in that area and then piece it together with this data binding. We're going to be good at data binding with Knockout. So if you want to categorize Knockout, think it does two-way data binding. It does it really well, right? It's starting to move into its newest version is starting to move into the web component space. But as far as a router, it punch you to one of those other libraries. It does whatever. So that's where our differentiated is. That's not as full of a package, but there's, you know, nothing wrong with it. I just like to have, personally, I like to have more in the box, right, when I come to it, things. So, good question. Yes, go ahead.
Same question, but with Meteor, and is it alive yet, or is it?
I am not as much of an authority on Meteor, I can say. I'll tell you this though, this is kind of an interesting story to tell you just to, you know, support my talk here. I went to a meetup, my JavaScript meetup in Columbus, Ohio, and Guy Royce, I don't, he's probably been up here to speak, he was giving him his Meteor talk, right? And most of it was just an hands-on activity. I had not used Meteor at all. I chose to kind of cut the line with it in the book because, I didn't really say this, it's more of, if these are frameworks, it's a platform, I feel like. Like it goes all the way to database to front end, right? It involves the server and node on the server and so forth, so it cuts more fully through the stack, which gives it some advantages. When I was picking it up, I came into it with, you know, I had written most of my book. I came into it with the mindset that I had with basically, let me go back a couple slides. You know, with this stack in my head, right? And I would pick it up, and the guy who was pairing me with me, I would say, like, oh, it uses handlebar style syntax for the templating engine or whatever. And then I'd say, oh, its models are kind of like Backbone or whatever, you know, and this kind of thing. And it has this thing called Iron Router, which is a router, right? And like, it's this cool feature of Meteor or whatever. It's got the Iron Router. And this guy was like, after a while, he didn't know who I was or that I'd written the book or anything. He's like, what are you talking about? How do you understand all this, right? And I think it's so, knowing this, I think is very valuable as new frameworks and things come up. I do think Meteor is here to stay. It's legitimate. It's just different. It's more a full stack and a choice. I think it's a little more targeted at not as experienced developers. I don't want to, people who are maybe from the design background and getting into coding. It's a little easier to ramp up on. It is also extremely productive. Like, you know, compared to doing a similar example, I was amazed at how much code we were able to write that night. Let's put it that way. So. That's my, you know, one night of Meteor and why I chose to cut it out of the book, if that helps.
Thanks.
Sure. Yeah.
Have you dipped your toe in the new AngularJS, and if so, your thoughts on the impact? I mean, it's significantly different than,
right,
as I understand it. Impact and, like, you know, preparedness for making that change.
I definitely have dipped my toe in it because I'm doing some Angular training. People aren't asking for it, but I'm trying to keep up on it. Long story short, I think it's one of those things where people's initial reaction is going to be, you move my cheese, and then after people see what it is and they play with it for a while, I think people are really going to like it. I think if you guys have had some talks here on ES6, right, it is basically just like recognizing that ES6 is the future, and it really looks like ES6 on steroids, right? It looks like JavaScript, an evolution of JavaScript and an evolution of the framework at the same time. These core concepts are still there. The syntax is very different, but they were able, you know, they were willing to make a big, you know, leap to recognize that they couldn't just keep, you know, patching up their framework, that they would eventually not be the preferred framework. So I feel pretty good about where they're heading. I think they had a kind of a PR disaster there, you know, with the NG Europe when everybody was up in arms about it, but I think they made a little bit of a comeback at NG Conf, and I think I feel pretty good about where they're heading. As far as parts of the framework in particular that I like the fact that the new framework, I love the fact that it embraces EX6 and classes, and they're embracing TypeScript and things like that. I don't know if anybody heard about that from NG Conf. So basically, they made an announcement that before they had this thing called AtScript, right, which was sort of a superset of TypeScript that they were using as part of Angular 2. Now they're fully, like, they've worked with the TypeScript team, even though it's at Microsoft, and they're, like, basically, you don't have to write in TypeScript, but they're fully, like, on board with TypeScript, basically pushing it. So it's gotten a big push lately in popularity because of that. Now, again, note, you still don't have to write that way, but when you do write that way, it makes it a very pleasant experience in the things I've played with so far. The other big piece is the router. The new router, the biggest knock that I didn't really talk about here against Angular in my book, and I've, you know, written about it, is the router that's in the box for Angular, they actually had to take it out. If you notice that script I showed you, or the shell page for the Angular, it had the Angular core library, and then it had ng route as a separate included script. Because they pulled it out of the core, because it was so basic. It was a lot just like the basic router and backbone. But Ember's router is significantly more robust. In a nutshell, not to talk forever, it does nested views and it does multiple named views. So it allows you to basically make more of a composable UI story and not just have one placeholder on the page that we, like we looked at here. It'll allow you to have a placeholder within a placeholder or five placeholders on the page and then compose up your page that way. So if you want to know more about that, my blog has an article, recent article, funnyant.com. Just look for AngularJS UI router, and I go into more depth and show the code. So all that to say, the new router in Angular has those features. They're actually moving it back, not just into 2.0, but they're moving it into 1.4. I think it's there now. I've seen a couple articles on it so far and did an example last week on it for myself. I'm trying to get up to speed on it. So I really feel good about the new router in Angular. It was definitely the missing piece that they had. I've heard that. There's a collaboration. Yeah. So they're being very open and so forth. So I think the community is kind of coming together. Yes.
First of all, thanks.
Sure.
I'm an architect, so I love what you just did here. And the question
thank
is,
you.
Is this architectural model behind you your intellectual property, or is it, where did it come from?
That's interesting. It just came from, I think, 15 years of web development experience and then looking at the three frameworks and trying to write a book on them. But I think, I don't know that anybody else has written this, but I don't know that.
I've seen it. That's why I'm asking.
Right. I never thought about it that way. Thanks for the compliment. But yeah, I'm not trying to hold copyright on it, although just don't give away my book for free. That's all I ask.
it's very interesting.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to think about it in terms of this is what we did on the server. And this is what we're doing on the client, right? And there's some talk in my book about that, just more of the general, what's happening in JavaScript and the fact that, basically, we have all these tools, we have the grunts and the gulps of the world on the server, right? But on the client, we're still evolving, our world there, right? So that's why this is such an exciting time to be in the JavaScript space. So thanks. Other questions? Yeah. That's those sound like your thoughts. So what was the first statement? I'll address each one.
Not necessarily those, but what other angles do you use to kind of make a choice? Would Ember be for prototyping? Is it quicker? Or is Angular more production ready because it's coming out of the world? How do you
Right. So I wrote a 270-page book on this. I recommend you pick it up. But there's a last chapter called Recommendations. But no, honestly, it is a big conversation. As far as free stuff that you can get to hear me talk about it for a half an hour or something like that, that's just not the point of this talk, but I'll try to address some of those things quickly. Listen to the JavaScript Jabber. Do you podcast guy at all?
Yeah.
I was on JavaScript Jabber, so listen to my interview on there. I think the best interview I did was on Scott Hanselman. I was in a good mood that day or something, and it came out better. So if you look on hanselminutes.com and check out that interview, we talk more about other things you could choose on. In addition to that, I think your best bet is to either sign up for my book or, if you're not really interested in that sort of thing, sign up at least for the newsletter. I send out quite a bit of stuff for free in my newsletter along that, just like an autoresponder about things. So, sure.
So in your email, you got those two polls.
Uh-huh. You want to see what it is.
What's the platform that you're using today? What are your answers?
I would say, when I was done with the book, I would say my answer to my favorite framework was Ember, but I wouldn't have chose it for a project. I'm a little worried that, do you guys remember the time when there was jQuery and there was Scriptaculous and there was MooTools,
yeah.
Right? What is there now? jQuery, right? And was jQuery that much better than those other libraries, right? What was it better at, do you think? Why do you think it won? What's that? Did I hear community?
Mindshare.
Yeah, I think Angular's really good at working with the community. Not that Ember's not, but You know, and I feel like if you can win the hearts of people, you know, you can bring your technology along after this. I'll give you an example. I thought this, you know, and let me finish answering your question first. So the framework I'm using, you know, I'm training once a month on Angular. If I do a project, I'm probably going to use Angular. I had trouble warming up the backbone, but you can't just take that because I'm one person, right? I'm a person that always liked frameworks that did things for me, right? So you have to ask yourself, are you a person that, you know, is deep into jQuery and loves to sort of invent things? Then you're going to be happier with Backbone. Doesn't want anybody to, you know, push something down your throat. You're going to be happier with Backbone. But I'm pretty much in the Angular camp. But I think when I was done writing the book, I actually thought Ember was a, you know, pound for pound at the time, because the router was better in Ember at the time. You had to go out external. If you have to go get the Angular UI router to do it. That Ember was a better framework at the time. But I think that it was a very close race, and Angular is clearly winning the popularity contest. So, you know, if I'm betting money on it, I'm choosing Angular. So.
This may be
I need to show those polls at the end. Yeah.
Architecturally, I don't think so.
Well, the problem is if let's say you got three developers and you tell them that, they might end up in like a wrestling on the floor or something like that afterwards.
But
I think it's, you know, it's about what project you're doing. Like, you know, are you doing a mobile app versus something where you need, you know, really a lot of performance out of, you know, I might lean more towards writing something by, if it's not a big app and it's in Backbone, you know, I might lean more towards the Backbone side because I have all this performance, you know. But then I'd say, oh gosh, you know, there's new libraries coming out that help you on the Angular side. So it's really, you know, it's a personal trade-off. It doesn't make a huge difference. Well, I don't want to say that. I think yeah, I think, though, on a given use case, it can make a difference, right? There's a right choice, I think, for every project that you take on. I think just saying that one framework is better than the other one is not valid, but I think if you have a given project, I could legitimately make an argument for why a particular framework is better for that project, you know?
It requires 90% re-education of your
development staff. Right.
Yeah.
That would be one of the factors. That's what I'm saying, right? So, and those are the kind of things I point out at the end of the book. Like, so if you have a team of Rails developers, you know, Ember is a lot closer to Ember, right? So, you know, but that's a factor in it. It's not the end game, right? It's a, you know, do you weigh that 20% in your decision? And then do you say, do I have a mobile app, right? So, so it's a lot of things. But yeah, I will not purport that there aren't valid big differences for a given project on one of these frameworks. I just think don't get caught up in the minutia, like you're suggesting, right? Have the bigger picture in mind. So. What else we got?
Can you speak briefly about the testability of each of the frameworks?
Yeah, Angular, hands down. In fact, I've heard the Ember, you know, Tom Dale from the Ember team literally say, pick something that, you know, that you admire about Angular, right? And I'll say testability right out of the box. Now that said, I've had people, you know, from the Ember community email me and say, you know, with the Ember CLI, which is their, you know, new command line interface, testing's getting a lot easier. But I think, I haven't looked hard into it, but I think what they're saying is, you know, from a tooling process, more like a grunt gulp process, things are getting easier. And from a scaffolding, you know, like a yeoman scaffolding process, things are getting easier. I still think there's that core, do you have dependency injection built into the framework? You know what I mean? Like where Angular still edges it out. On the other hand, and literally comes with a mocking library, you know, built into it to, you know, mock out HTTP requests. It's just much easier to get up and get started on that. I'll say, though, that the flip side of that is you're in JavaScript, right? How hard is it to mock something, right? So, right, you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, but it is a lot easier to write testable code. You fall in the pit of success with Angular, for sure. Yes? Right. I mean, I think that definitely helps. I can say that, you know, we know the reality of the world, and that is that a lot of times when people have to learn something new, testing goes to the wayside, even if the framework's extremely testable. So I've seen a lot of apps out in the wild that still don't have a lot of tests, even with Angular, right? So, but if I was at a company that had good test coverage, you know, I would think that that would give it a benefit. I think some of the things they're planning that I've heard glimpses of is maybe more like a code linting tool to help you, you know, in the migration path, because I think it is going to be very different. But at the end of the day, I think you'll end up writing in a more mature language, a language that looks more like ES6, which I think we could, you know, if you've looked at that, all agree is an evolution and a nice change. So. Do I need to cut things right here? Do I need to cut this off at some point, organizers, or are we good? I'll keep going, I don't mind.
We should probably try to wrap it up by 8, just for
okay.
Sticking
around. What time is it now? Strong feedback from the community, and they got it. Like, you know, they got that. And they're current, you know, just to be clear, elaborate on what you're saying. They're current. What they're currently saying that makes me feel better is they're basically saying there's AngularJS.org, which is the current site, right? And then there's, I think it's Angular.io or AngularJS.io. Angular, first one, Angular.io, which is the 2.0 site. And then what they're basically going to do is wait until, you know, they're going to keep supporting 1.x until the traffic goes, you know, down to a very low level on that original Angular site on the 1.x branch, you know, piece. So to me, that makes me feel better because they have to win your heart, right? Like they have to convince you that what they've done is better than 2.0, or they're just going to keep, you know, on the 1.x path forever. They've committed to that publicly. Plus, they have to win 1,200, the hearts of 1,200 developers at Google who are going to have to make the same choice, right? So there's 1,200 apps internally at Google, is the word, current state of things, and they have to make it so that those teams want to move. If that, you know, they don't make it compelling for those teams to move their, you know, migrate their apps, then, you know, they're going to have their own internal problems, right? So. I'm pretty confident in the team, but, you know, I've been wrong before, but that's why I feel okay about it. You know, I feel like they're no longer saying there won't be a migration path. They're just saying, we don't even know what 2.0 looks like exactly. We want to get more feedback from you, and then we're going to build the migration path. And so I can appreciate that, right? I've been on projects where it's like,
you know, your boss wants a timeline, but you don't even know what you're building, right? Like, so.
I actually didn't get to go to an account. So one of the things they talked about there was the ability to run both of them side by side. So you can literally start with the one at XF today, and then later on start pulling in pieces of 2.0. And building stuff, new components on 2.0 as you kind of transition over.
Exactly, and that's a great example of, like, you know, what they're doing, bending over backwards to help their teams migrate. I even saw things where, you know, somebody's on an older version of the router and they have like a router migration path, so you can have two routers running in your app simultaneously, so you don't have to like port your entire app over. And they talked about how they considered, you know, allowing that just to, you know, requiring a big bang, you know, sort of migration versus not. And I think they talked about it internally with all their teams and so forth. So I feel like they've got enough feedback between the size of the community and the push from their internal community that they'll come out with something decent. But, you know, I could be wrong. They named the new router in Angular, new NG new router. So I could still be wrong because I hate that name. But yes.
Yeah. I was wondering how React and that whole thing, how that changes.
Right. That's been a hard one for me to really wrap my head around. I was talking to these guys over here about it before during the lab. One thing to do is, again, I'm not trying to sell my blog, but I did write an article that's pretty popular on the internet about, it's literally called React.js, what is it? And it sort of talks about those questions like, how does it compare to these things? And, you know, I wrote it right after I finished the book because people were sort of asking about it and I didn't include it in the book. But to sum it up, I think that it's just the, you know, if you think of these as MVC frameworks, it's just the V, right? At some level, it's just the V, right? It's just the view. It's a really good view, right, on the one hand. And the other thing it's got going for it is, you know, I noticed the talk that's coming up, it's got the Flux architecture stuff in it. And I think there is really some valid stuff in rethinking, like, okay, when we were on the server, we didn't have all this two-way data binding going on. You know, most of the time it was easier to reason about data unidirectionally flowing through an app, right? And so I feel like those are the big pluses of it. On the con side, I feel like, I was pretty critical, if you read the article, of it, because I was like, how can you be productive in this? Like, you know, when you use it, it seems like you're mixing your view and your template together. It's, you know, there's a lot of, performance is great, but there's just a lot of, like, it's kind of like Knockout, where it was like Knockout came along and it's like, it did the data binding really well, and then all the other frameworks kind of incorporated that good idea into it. I kind of feel like React, at least my first gut reaction was, might be, hey, we fixed the view part for you, you know, in your framework, and now maybe you need to incorporate those ideas into these bigger frameworks that provide more than just the V part of it. So, but I think the jury's still out, but they're kind of going in a different weird direction, right? Did you see the React Native stuff, right? So for those who don't know, they're not only compiling to HTML, basically, in the DOM, right? They're compiling to native apps now. Which is an interesting take. And I just don't know how many companies have Facebook-type problems, right? But maybe Facebook's just ahead of us as developers, right? And we're all going to have these problems, and we just need to evolve into it. So. Cool. I think that's all. I'm happy to talk to anybody, and I'm going to go to the bar afterwards, so feel free.